Oh.
Welcome back. It is the Monsters of the Midday on a Thursday. Mark and Missile in studio. I am out in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. So welcome to the show, the Iron Man of the Sports Animal, Mr. Jake Trotter. How you doing, Jake?
Doing good, Dusty. I'm curious to what you've learned out there in Scottsdale. What's been the buzz? Got some good rumors? Any inside info?
Let's see. Any rumors? I don't know about any rumors. I can tell you that I had a very interesting meeting yesterday with the Pac-12 coaches. That is a very disgruntled group with their placement. They are not fans of the Pac-12 After Dark, the late night games. If you remember, it's crazy. The Pac-12, they refuse to kind of embrace who they are and where they're at. Like, they want the big money, so they agree to a big contract with ESPN, but the only time that it can make sense for ESPN to pay them the money they want to make is in that window, right? Is in that late-night window. But they had an opportunity to get out of it if they're going to pay money back, if they were going to pay ESPN, but they don't want to pay the money back, so they rejected that. So now you've got these coaches that are just kind of complaining about it as opposed to embracing it. It was a very odd vibe in the room yesterday when we went in. I felt like we were taking heat for decisions and things that are way over a color analyst's head. So there was some,
was some
agitation.
Is Herb Street out there?
Yeah, it was me, Herbie, and Brock Hewitt in the room, and we were
so
taking heat, and then Placey.
Did Herb Street and Peterson get into it at all?
No, they had a talk before he walked in, but it was kind of more Peterson was kind of getting after Brock a little bit. It was kind of back and forth. David Shaw was also very outspoken and not happy.
Tell those guys, I guess they're gone now, but or in the middle, about to leave. Tell those guys that they can – they can take their content back and put it on the Pac-12 network, and 1,500 people can have access to it. But then they can kick off the games whenever they want. I mean, that's the alternative. I don't understand. So, listen, I understand the frustration, but, like, what, you know, there's plenty of things for the Big 12 to be frustrated about, but it's also reality. The reality is that they're three time zones over from the East Coast, and they have a disaster of a conference network set up.
College football is quickly becoming a sport of the South and the Midwest, period. End of story. Like, the Pac-12's relevance is just it's not as much there. I've been to games on the West Coast, a lot of them, and the passion and the fervor isn't the same as it is in the southeastern part of the United States. Not close.
Bingo. And that's to me, they can get mad at ESPN, and they can be frustrated about the fact that people on the – there's an East Coast bias. The reality is there is not a craving for football on the West Coast the way that there are in other parts of the country, plain and simple. If there was, then that would be reflected, right? And
the
Pac-12
network would be on DirecTV.
Right.
It would be on ATT Uverse.
Because you would have fans that are saying,
like,
I want this product. I am demanding this product. Make it happen. And they would have made it happen. That's not what's going on. So, like, it's kind of like they want to be treated, make the same money, and have all these same things as the Big Ten or the SEC in their contracts, yet they don't want to acknowledge or embrace who they are, where they're at, and what windows make most sense for them to be able to, you know, make that kind of money. So there's a big disconnect. And here's the other part. The Pac-12 is a conference. They get it. The conference level gets it. The institutional level refuses to accept it as the way it's going to be. So
keep an eye on that as the Pac-12 nears its grant of rights expiration here in, believe, the year before the Big 12 does. That's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and then on the other side, we met with the American yesterday. We had a great meeting with the American. But, you know, their big thing is that, you know, they want to be on par with the other big boys. They want to be viewed as a Power 6 instead of a Power 5. Like, that's their slogan, their branding, that they're trying
good,
to – that's the message they're
good
trying to get out.
That. Yeah, best of luck. Good luck.
Yeah, so
the problem that the Big 12 has had in the past is that they need – USC. That's a brand that's relevant nationally. Stanford isn't. Washington isn't. I mean, they've got to have a big effort out of those two teams in Los Angeles to kind of reclaim interest from the rest of the country.
Yeah, and they don't really have a second program. I mean, Stanford has been really good, but Stanford is not.
Doesn't resonate.
No, and Oregon kind of steps into that vacuum, but Oregon, it feels like, has been on the downswing for some time. You know, they've got their third coach in 3 years.
Well, here's a problem with Oregon is I do think that you're right about them stepping into the vacuum. But for example, they don't have Alabama and Oklahoma what they have, because in Oklahoma for 7 decades, the University of Oklahoma's football team has been great. That affects dad, grandpa, you know, son, everybody. It's blended into the culture. Where Oregon, they weren't very good for 5 decades. So the fan base isn't as bought in as what it is at Oklahoma and Alabama and some of these other schools.
Yeah, Oregon really benefited from being kind of a national team for a while because of the
new rich
and the uniform. Yeah, and that has waned a little bit. I wrote about it last year. Everybody's copied them into oblivion. So what is Oregon's identity anymore? I mean, everybody does alternative uniforms. Everybody plays with speed. And, you know, everybody goes fast. So Oregon just doesn't stick out the way it did before. And so it's not going to appeal to the 13-year-olds out there looking to jump on a bandwagon the way that it did, you know, 10 years ago.
I agree. I think Chip Kelly's going to get it going at UCLA. I think also that was it was like a perfect storm, right? Bilotti kind of got it going. They got the money in from Nike. They had the uniforms. And then with Chip Kelly, they had that fast-paced offense. It was the cool school. I think it's kind of like the cool place to be.
It was cool.
I don't know. I think Chip Kelly, I think he's the real deal. I don't know. I'm not saying that UCLA is going to win a national championship, but I don't think it takes him long to get it rolling in L.A.
You can find quarterbacks in L.A. I mean, they'll be really good at quarterback, you would imagine. I mean, they've been good at quarterback by accident.
They can get skill there, too. But just being where they're at in the state, I mean, they can get talented skill players. They can get speed.
Have you talked to Bowlesby or anybody Big 12?
I did.
Walt Anderson retired from director of officials.
I bet he
knows what else. I'm glad you said that. I got Bob Bowlesby's. We had several good conversations, and he's actually going to come on the show next week. I asked Mr. Bowlesby if he wanted to talk a little shop with Oklahoma City. So I had some great conversations with him. We did not talk about Walt Anderson, but he seemed in a very good mood. He seems to be very happy with where the Big 12 is and with the year that they had. So he was
they're
going to
distribute
smiles.
About 8 million. They're going to distribute, I think, about like 8 million more per school than the Pac-12. And that is not including revenue. For example, the Longhorn Network or Sooner Sports that Oklahoma and Texas are going to net. So there's a chance that like somebody like Texas will bring in close to 33 more million this past year than somebody like UCLA or USC will, even though those two schools are in the LA market. It's crazy.
They're just not a big deal in the LA market.
Have you been hanging out at that hotel bar? Is a pretty good setup. I'm assuming that they're at the same place in Scottsdale they've been in the past.
We are at the Hyatt and Gainey Ranch. Most people have said I think this is where it's at. So yeah, it's a good setup. Food's been good. You know, it's the hospitality's been fantastic, and I spent lunch yesterday. I felt bad because I was just gonna have lunch by myself instead at the bar after the show in between meetings, and I turn around, before I sat down, I just said hi to Matt Rhule. You know, he remembered coming on with us, Mark. He said he enjoyed coming on our show at Big 12 Media Day. And, you know, he just seemed like a very nice guy. So I just kind of start chatting with him about, you know, him moving from the East Coast and being in Texas. And next thing I know, they're scooting over, and I joined them for lunch. And he even bought my lunch. They had to leave and go to a massage. But I sat there for about 45 minutes. And just, you know, he endured a very – challenging season, as we all knew he was going to, but he said that you know, and part of the reason he wanted to go there, he knew it was going to be tough, but they're giving him plenty of time to be able to do it exactly the way he wants. So he basically said, from a culture standpoint, they started at you know, the base floor, and and that they've just tried to build that thing up. So he's excited about his recruiting class, and sounds like he thinks they're going to have a good chance to make a bowl next year. So I really like him. I don't know if it works. I don't think he ever gets it to where Art Briles did, but he's a good guy, and I do like Matt Rhule. Very impressed with
him.
He's
a lot of fun. He's a lot of fun to talk to. Really, like, some coaches are kind of difficult to talk with, like, non-football wise. He's really easy to chat with about whatever topic. I swung by Waco on my way back from Austin a week or so ago, and hung out with him for a little bit in Waco, and he was talking about how he misses the Italian food in Philly, but he likes. You know, he's starting to get into barbecue more and more. He didn't really know much about it before he moved. The other thing he told me is kind of interesting. We were just talking about, different offenses. And he said that at Temple, he said if they, because they had a really, they were like Baylor last year, his first year at Temple. They were like 0-11 or something. And he said the next year, if they didn't turn it around, that he was going to go to the option. He was going to go like the wishbone option next year. And I said, that'd have been pretty cool because we have so few, we have like basically the, academies in Georgia Tech, and that's it. But Temple almost went to option football if they had struggled. Of course, they were really good, and then they won the American the year after. But the situation is tough. They've got a long way to go. The perception of Baylor, maybe it's forever changed from the Art Briles era there. But he is easy to root for. I mean, you pull for him.
If he is if he's as good of a coach as he is a speaker or a PR person, then they will get it turned back around. He's extremely infectious. If he was a CEO of a company, he'd really succeed. I mean, he's a great spokesperson. Whether or not he believes everything that he's selling, it comes across as believable.
One thing they do there, Mark, sorry.
At times this year, I thought it was almost a little too good to be true, some of the things he was saying, but I have been around him, and he is very good at what he does.
They do this thing where the faculty at Baylor, they have like a pickup basketball game every day. And he made a deal with his wife that he was going to work out every day during the off season. So he goes and plays in these pickup basketball games every day. And he's there's a history professor, there's like a, dean of a college. He's in the middle of these faculty basketball games. I don't know that you can see a lot of coaches just kind of get involved like that. So he's just kind of hangs out on campus and, they will be better. I mean, they were a really good 1-11 team. They were in a lot of games. They gave OU problems. They almost beat a couple of other people. Got off to a horrible start with the Liberty loss. But they got Charlie Brewer at quarterback, the next Lake Travis guy. They've got a pretty good receiving in Denzel Mims, who lit up the Sooners in that game. Chris Platt, who's a speed guy. And then you guys remember Jalen Hurd from Tennessee? So they'll be better. I mean, I don't know that they're going to be a bowl team, but they that's a team that could knock off a couple of people next year, especially if Charlie Brewer can channel his banner Baker Mayfield and make some plays.
I to your point, Mark, I do think it is authentic. I don't think it's just an act. And again, like, infectious is a great way to describe him. He told me that a story about them. After the Oklahoma game and how well, they played well, but they lost a close game. He said that the fan base, he was really, he's really impressed and excited. They gave him a standing ovation. And he said it was one of those deals, and he said he addressed it. But, you love that. You appreciate the fans, acknowledging that you're getting better, you're playing well. But he's like, don't ever give a standing ovation if we lose again. He said, I'd rather you boo us than cheer for us losing. So I thought that was pretty good.
Is he going to be the head? I know he's getting paid a ton of money. Is he going to be the head coach at Baylor in 2021? 2020.
I would say
in 2 years from now, he's still going to be the head coach at Baylor.
He got an interview for the Colts, right?
Huh?
He got an interview for the Colts.
He got an interview with the Colts. Yeah, right. He did.
I would say that if he does a good job and his name continues to come up, even if it's a better college job somewhere in the East Coast, it would not surprise me if he left.
I could see him at like a Rutgers or Maryland or a Power Five school, but on the East Coast. So there aren't many of them.
I don't think he'd leave for that.
I don't think he'd leave for one of those. I'm talking about a big-time job.
I think his future is a better job.
Syracuse?
No. No.
No. That's a lateral move.
Or less.
So you're saying you guys don't think he would take a lateral move. You think it has to be a step up.
No, I don't. I don't. But I do think, though, if he does have success, people are going to be really impressed because everybody, I think, fully acknowledges what a you-know-what storm he walked into. And so if he can reshape that and get it going again, I think that's going to be very impressive to a lot of people.
Which was a great career. It's a great career move for him. Great career move for him in a sense. This sense, Dusty, is that one, he's got the long-term job security, the six-year contract, which he told you about. He's got NFL experience. He's been on the Giants coaching staff. He was a good player collegiately. He did a great job at Temple. And so if he does go there and turn around Baylor and do the impossible, he's got himself set up for the elite of the elite jobs. So,
Correct. No,
he's not leaving Baylor for a lateral
that's
move.
A big if.
Well, if he fails, then he just goes back to turning around Temple and having that guaranteed kind of money, and nobody could turn around Baylor. So I disagree. I think he's put himself in a position where he can't fail here. He's just got an interview we all just praising the guy for 10 minutes about how good of a dude he is and how well he comes across, which is everything in sports. I mean, you got to be able to be likable and get the message across, which is what a coach does. So I got nothing but that guy's going nowhere.
You know, he was in on the Oregon job. Dusty, you probably know this. I mean, he was a guy they were really looking at for Oregon. And I can't say definitively that he chose Baylor over Oregon, but I think he was pulled in that direction for whatever reason. And so I don't know that I wonder if he had a full grasp of the just what condition Baylor was in from a public relations nightmare perspective. But you guys are right. I mean, listen, let's say he goes 6-6 this year, he'll get some job offers, and I wouldn't be surprised if he took one of them.
That's right. And I would say he knew he was stepping into a tough situation, but the degree and the still unfolding layers, I think it's safe to say he didn't fully grasp the scope of – hey, and one other side note, too. They are trying to find better places to eat, but his wife did tell me she did graduate from culinary school. So I think she feeds him pretty well. So he's got a chef at the house to still get him those East Coast Italian cuisines that he enjoys.
Yeah, I told him about Smaltz's, so he's gonna be able to have one pretty good place in the rotation there.
Hey, by the last thing, and you don't have to really comment, but I'm just gonna tell you this right now, Jake. I'm starting to feel already the Texas drum being beaten. I heard several people mention to me that people think it's going to be a big year for Tom Herman, so I'm just preparing everybody now.
That was my favorite take, Fita. I was on with a missile, and I said the same thing. So we might be both getting sucked in simultaneously again.
I've vowed not to do it, Mark. Hey, thanks, Jake.
Good
great
happen.
Stuff. We'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.